Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. We have lots and lots to discuss. Larry, there are so many topics, and I always like to go with the ones that my guests prefer. I think we're on the same page on virtually everything, but what's most on your mind? I'm probably a number of things, just like in my case, but pick a topic and let's begin, and then we'll shift to other things that are on both of our minds.
Fantastic. Well, again, I really appreciate every time, every chance I can spend with you, Stephen, my brother. So what's on my mind, I guess first and foremost, surprise, surprise, is Ukraine.
Certainly on my mind as well.
And I'm willing to go anywhere and everywhere you'd like to go, but I definitely want to address that and how it really shows that we do not have a well or functioning democracy in this nation, or quite frankly, in the EU, in terms of what's happening to horrible things that are happening at the behest of Washington and the EU, the horrible things that are happening to the people of Ukraine.
Well, there's no question about that. Ukraine has been very messed up since it separated after the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991. But things became horrific, absolutely horrific. They went through two color revolutions, one in 2004, the last one in February of this year. Color revolution meaning oust a sitting government and put an illegitimate one in its place. And in this case, the Washington installed, when I use the phrase color revolution, I really associated with U.S. policy, because that's what it's all about. And literally, Washington elevated illegitimate fascist putschists to power. Criminals, vicious people. The people running Ukraine today represent the first fascist reemergence in Europe since the Nazis were defeated in 1945. And that's how dangerous things are now. The fact that the Ukrainian government is waging war against its own people And being very confrontational with Russia, so much so that literally there could be a flashpoint east-west confrontation that could erupt into something resembling a global war. It's not a prediction that it'll happen, but the possibility is there because of the rogue government running things in Ukraine, Larry. Again, I consider it the world's most dangerous hotspot.
So do I. So do I. Not only because of what is actually, as you just pointed out, not only because of what is occurring in Ukraine itself, but the effects globally, particularly as they affect the East and the West. And when I say East and West now, I'm talking about, in general terms, Russia and the United States and its so-called allies. And in particular, NATO. What we're looking at, I believe, quite frankly, is a situation where, as you pointed out, the U.S., Washington has in very real terms, not figurative terms, but real terms, has installed, oligarchs and fascists. So the choice, in Kiev right now is a choice between oligarch fascists and oligarch fascists, you know?
That's basically what it comes down to, Larry.
I mean,
maybe some a little more fascist than others, but basically fascist, you know, a rose by any other name.
Right, right, exactly. And it's so enlightening, in quotation marks, it's so enlightening to see that it is the so-called bastion of democracy, that is Washington, that is behind the atrocities that are being committed, that is actually, it's to say Washington in particular is behind the installment of these fascists, you know, and we have to understand that. So what does that say about our so-called democracy in the United States? It certainly doesn't bode well for any so-called democracy here in this nation. It's something that I think that, unfortunately, far too many so-called Americans or U.S. citizens, people inside the United States in general, citizens or not, have no clue about not only what, many don't even know where Ukraine is, don't understand the geopolitical reality of Ukraine.
They probably never heard of it, Larry, before it broke in the news months back. And then as it goes out of the news, a lot of people, if you said the word Ukraine, people wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Sadly, this applies to so much, I would say, virtually everything on the international perspective when it comes to the programmed ignorance of so, and I said programmed ignorance of so many people in this nation. Yet, the effects of being ignorant can be absolutely devastating, not only nationally, but globally. We cannot afford a thermonuclear war. And in point of fact, I would submit to you, Stephen, that we're actually already at war. It's just not a thermonuclear war. It's not a so-called hot war. But thanks to the outrageous policy of Washington and the EU, NATO in particular, the outrageous aggression and the constant propaganda of the vomit stream, corporate-controlled news media, we are actually already in a state of war in the sense that the propaganda that's being waged is a low-level war. It's a low-intensity war. Certainly not. It's not low-intensity for the people in Ukraine, especially the people in eastern Ukraine. It's very, very physical. It's very, very real. It's very, very devastating. But in the sense, that's a high-intensity war. But in the sense of globally, as this affects people worldwide, and including in this nation, we're already in a low-intensity war. So what Washington has done, it has, quote, recreated a quote-unquote Cold War. It has deliberately recreated it. Why? For the purpose of encircling Russia, for the purpose of greed, for the purpose, we're certainly not spreading democracy. We don't even have democracy here. So how can we spread something that we don't have? It's like asking someone for butter when all they have is margarine. But, you know, the point is it is affecting so many countries. It's not just Ukraine, but it affects Russia because Ukraine is right on Russia's borders. But it also affects many, many other countries, both east and west. And I'm talking in this context, I'm especially referring to Europe, Eastern Europe and Western Europe. And these maniacs that are running government of Ukraine, and that's quite frankly or I should be more specific and say in Kiev, the maniacs that are, and they are maniacs, that are running this government, these oligarchs, these fascists, are supported by the maniacs in Washington, in Washington, and those in NATO who seem interested only in war, and more war, because it makes money for the corporations, but it also serves the purpose of, as they think, of trying to weaken Russia, which is utterly ridiculous, utterly ridiculous. The election, so-called election, that was recently held in Ukraine was an utter and total farce. And yet the corporate stream media, and particularly in the West, is lauding this farce as being a spectacle of democracy. I mean, this is insane. This
indeed,
is utter
indeed,
insane.
Indeed, so, Larry, I wrote about it. I wrote about the scandalous things in the U.S. Scoundrel media praising what deserves condemnation. And you're absolutely right. The election was absolutely farcical, with family members running to replace senior members doing something else. The oligarch president, I don't consider him a legitimate president, this guy Poroshenko, he's a billionaire. And you know how billionaires make their money, the old-fashioned way. He's got a son running for the same seat that he held years ago as a member of the Ukrainian parliament, what they call the Rada, R-A-D-A, and his son is now running for the same seat. Well, he's not running for the seat. It was handed to him, and he will replace his father. Well, his father hasn't held a seat for a while. He went into business. He had a number of government posts in the past, but one of them was to hold a seat in the parliament, and now the son will take over the seat. But there are lots of other examples, the same thing. So handpick people to go through the illusion of an election and come up with a government that absolutely will not serve the interests of the Ukrainian people. It's a pretty sorrowful situation. Plus the militancy and the danger that this government poses to the region and actually the planet.
Yes, yes. I mean, when one looks, just I urge people to just use their common sense, for crying out loud. One doesn't have to be a political scientist to get this. It's very clear. It's not that complicated. When you have an election and virtually half of your country doesn't even vote in the election, doesn't consider the election legitimate, which it certainly was not legitimate anyway, and even those, and I'm not just talking about the folks in East Ukraine. I'm not talking just about the people there. I'm talking about people as well in the western part of the country, where parties, legitimate parties, were simply banned, no longer were banned out of existence by the Kiev government, which immediately disenfranchised at least 30% of the people in the West. They had nothing to vote for, not to mention the fact that the fascists were literally, and I mean literally, running through the streets, beating people up. Okay, is that democracy? But of course, the so-called media, what I call the vomit stream, corporate stream, Western media, says absolutely little or nothing about that reality. And it's sickening. It's sickening, and I want to really emphasize this, Stephen. It's not only sickening with respect to what's being done in Ukraine and how that is affecting, as you said, the nations and peoples of that entire region, including Ukraine, but it's sickening when it makes us, we have to look at ourselves in this nation and say, how can we be supporting this? How can we be supporting, these atrocities? It's hard for me, quite frankly, sometimes to even to get to sleep at night thinking about this nation and the people of this nation. It's embarrassing. It's shameful when I think of what we are allowing, and I say we in a collective sense, this government that we really don't run, own, or control, when I say this government, the U.S. government, to do to the rest of the world, and in this case, Ukraine. But we could go from Ukraine to Iraq, to Syria, to Palestine, it's an endless list, as you know. So it's not only Ukraine, but Ukraine is such a blatant example of the U.S. supporting fascism. I'm just going to say it like it is, fascism.
Yeah, indeed it is, Larry. And I also say it this way. I consider U.S. government a fascist government based on the way they operate. You know, the merger of state and corporate power and the idea of permanent war all the time for peace that never comes. And this is exactly what's going on in America. And I use the phrase, comparing America and Ukraine, one fascist regime supports the other. Little wonder that America would install a government like that and give it such a strong support militarily, economically, and this is what's going on. And, of course, it wants a puppet government serving U.S. interests, and that's exactly what it has. But the danger is that because of the violence going on there and the extreme human rights violations and the anti-Russian bashing that's very intense, Ukraine shares a 1,500-mile land and water border with Russia. And, I mean, you could see sparks flying that could literally lead to a very dangerous East-West confrontation that could blow up into something much more different. I wrote an article this morning quoting considerably from what Russia's official title, I believe, is Deputy Defense Minister, a man named Rogovin, explaining Russia's response to the challenges it faces militarily to protect itself literally from a hostile America, from the possibility that literally it could find itself into a confrontation it does not want, but it needs to be prepared and ready. And one of the things that Rogovin stressed was Russia has an immense landmass, by far the largest landmass in the world, huge landmass. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many United States can be fit into the Russian landmass, even after all the Republicans, after all the republics were gone when the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991. But again, I mean, you see this landmass extending from Europe all the way to the Pacific Ocean, and, mm-hmm. and the population is only 135 million people. And Rogovin said, really, to defend a country like this size responsibly, you need about 600 million people. So Russia is compensating by being more strategic, by trying to keep its people, its military, as much out of harm's way as possible, and developing the most technologically advanced weapons it can for self-defense, not for offense. Since the Soviet Union dissolved, Russia hasn't attacked anybody. Putin hasn't attacked anybody. Putin doesn't threaten anybody. But you'd never know it based on the reports and the bashing that he gets all the time. And they always raise the topic of Georgia, the country of Georgia, in 2008. And I remember writing about it, Larry, and getting my first ever interview on Russian television. And it wasn't RT International. I don't remember what it was, but it was Russian television. And, of course, it was in English because I don't speak Russian. And they gave me 30 minutes all to myself discussing what happened. And what happened was very simple. South Ossetia broke away before the Georgian military invaded, sometime before. South Ossetia, a former province, it broke away, became independent at the urging of Washington. The Georgian government sent its military into South Ossetia, belligerently murdering people. South Ossetia, as many Russian nationals, about 1,700 were killed in cold blood before the government of Russia, then led by Dmitry Medvedev, said they could not stand by and do nothing. And they sent Russian military forces in to protect their own people, which anybody should have done. And, of course, the West irresponsibly blamed Russian aggression, which it was not. It was Georgian aggression and Russian self-defense protecting its own people. Had I been the leader of Russia, I would have done exactly the same thing. Maybe I wouldn't have waited for 1,700 people to be killed. If I saw Russians being slaughtered, I think I would have acted more quickly. But it was the right thing to do, and Russia to this day is still bashed for doing it. And, of course, the bashing today is intense.
Yes, yes, and the game is the same, too. I mean, you know, when you think about what actually took place, again, at the behest and urging of Washington, what took place with respect to Georgia, what are we seeing in Ukraine? I mean, who actually pulled the coup? Was it February against the Ukrainian government? Who was behind that coup? Why, Washington and its NATO partners was behind. They were the ones who were behind that coup, and that's what it was. It was a coup. Let's be honest. Or the same scenario is being played out, and I have to say that I am amazed, frankly, at the strategic restraint that Putin has demonstrated. I mean, clearly they're trying to egg Putin on, Russia on. they are trying, and by they, I'm talking about Washington in particular and its NATO allies or partners, are doing all they can to stir up as much trouble, as much, as many problems, kill or get as, and they know this means many people will be killed. They don't care about that. In fact, that fits into their scenario. It's the same thing. And by now, people in this country, the United States, should have enough damn sense to understand what the game is. You know, it's the game is pretty much the same scenario. But what people don't seem to get is that this puts us on a precipice, on a collision course for war. And I'm talking about hot war, not cold war. They've already taken us back to cold war.
Oh, indeed, so, Larry. And I would put an exclamation point on the coup that took place on the 22nd of February this year. Absolutely a coup, classic coup. And I compared it in Europe as the most brazen one since the Mussolini's 1922 march on Rome. Literally brazen, except Mussolini just marched in and took over. And in Ukraine, we had Independence Square, what they call the Maidan. We had the cold-blooded murders that took place for a number of days, and it was the government with positioning sharpshooters on buildings near the Maidan, on rooftops, in windows, and murdering ordinary Kiev residents, Ukrainian citizens, and murdering the police. And the police showed remarkable restraint, except for one day the police got out of hand, and the president at that time, Yanukovych, called the police to task. And it stopped right then and there. And the police showed too much restraint. When people are committing violence, it's the obligation of the police to protect the people from what's going on. And the police was a little bit too stand-back-ish. And around 100 people were murdered in cold blood. And that was the beginning, Larry, literally just the beginning. And it, maybe unsurprisingly, the worst was yet to come. And we had an agreement. It took place in Minsk, really in two stages. There was a protocol on the 5th of September, attended by the Ukrainian government and Russia and, I believe, America. I don't know if there was a fourth party there. I don't recall. A protocol was agreed on to end the fighting in the southeast. And on the 19th of September, there was a follow-up memorandum on the same thing. And the fighting has never stopped. And if you interviewed people in southeastern Ukraine, in what they call the Donbas area, Donetsk and Lugansk especially, people will tell you the fighting never stopped. The fighting continues.
Right.
And it's the responsibility of the Ukrainian government that's doing this. And, of course, the self-defense forces, the people I call freedom fighters, they're not going to stand back and do nothing. They're going to defend themselves. They're going to fight back, and that's exactly what is going on. People continue to be killed. We've got this horrible stuff going on, and it, sooner or later, it might erupt into something more than it already is, with many more deaths, maybe something more vicious and cruel than has already taken place up to now. And I think ordinary Ukrainians, Larry, in the Ukraine military want nothing to do with this. But there are some mighty, mighty nasty people in Ukraine, and they form separate units. They give them names. There's a National Guard in Ukraine. We're infiltrated by neo-Nazis, and these are the kind of people who are causing the most mischief, the most trouble, and really we could see an explosion of violence that may exceed what's happened up to now. And these people have powerful weapons, artillery, tanks, mortars, all kinds of stuff, aircraft. So we have a very, very dangerous situation.
And we, when I say we, I'm using that word in quotation marks, of course, the U.S. is supporting it. The U.S. and its NATO aggression, partners of aggression are supporting it. It's almost stunning beyond belief. I mean, this is like sci-fi gone mad. I mean, on steroids. But the thing is, it's not fiction, science or otherwise. It's reality. And I guess I keep trying to link this to the pattern, if you will, of what the U.S., what Washington constantly does In fact, since the Obamatron, Obama has come in, since the years he has been in, things have gotten even worse. That is to say, the policies of the United States government have become even more despicable, even more hypocritical, even more deadly, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Syria, whether it's Pakistan, whether it really doesn't matter, all over the globe. And my point being that this Mr. Hope and Change, okay, obviously, if people cannot see that in this country, cannot see who and what Obama really is, he and his minions, what they really are, then I don't know if they'll ever see. And my hope is that not only will they see, but they will take action and say, it's time for us to take our government back. This phony so-called election coming up on the 4th of November in this country, of course, is, again, a farce. Speaking of farces, what is there to, in fact, vote for? The Republicans? The Democrats? Why, they're the same, they're two sides of the same coin. You know, our system repeatedly shows that it is utterly and totally irretrievably broken. It is broken for everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. It is broken. Now it's working just fine for the filthy rich billionaires, for the corporate CEOs, for the military industrial captains of the military industrial complex, if you will. And I just want to add prison complex, because that's a big thing too in this country. Incarcerate, incarcerate, incarcerate. Why? That's big business. Why, corporations make millions and millions, if not billions. So we have to see that actually what's happening in Ukraine and in other countries that the United States is destabilizing is actually happening right here in our own country. We need to reflect on this. It is a reflection by it. What is occurring in Ukraine? What is occurring, the U.S. policies as relates to Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, it's an endless list. These policies are a reflection of a broken and hypocritical corporate-owned U.S. system right here in this country. And we certainly cannot depend or rely upon or look to either Democrats or Republicans, because they drink from the same trough. They come together when third parties, for example, so-called third parties, attempt to bring about some kind of real change. Why, the Democrats and Republicans, those two parties come together to quash that kind of movement, if you will. This the people should see, the people in this country. By now we should see this. We should understand that these two parties, which are really one party, have no legitimacy whatsoever. And if we don't act on this, then we've already lost huge amounts of our so-called civil liberties in this country. We're in a stage now that would make the book 1984 look like a kindergarten game, because we're way past that with the police surveillance state. If we don't take action, and by action I mean organized political collective action to take our government back, then not only is this nation doomed to become blatantly fascist. It's already fascist, Stephen. It's already fascist. Notice I said blatantly fascist. The veneer is wearing very, very thin, the veneer. We have no democracy here. We have a veneer, and even that is wearing thin. And it just, it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to see what we're doing, what this nation, what Washington is doing to the rest of the world. This is
outrageous.
Oh,
absolutely, Larry. Absolutely. I mean, a professor by the name of Bertram Gross back in the 1980s wrote a book called Friendly Fascism. I read it years ago. And he said when fascism arrives in America, it will come wrapped in the American flag. In other words, with a smiling face and so on and so forth. And Sinclair Lewis, maybe back in the 1920s or so, wrote a book called It Can't Happen Here. Yeah, can't happen here. It sure as hell can happen here. And it was a novel, but it basically told a story about fascism arriving in America with a profile of a candidate very much fitting a typical U.S. politician, and I would nominate Obama as a typical candidate portrayed in the book. I forget the character's name in the novel, but promising all kinds of rosy stuff, and then getting in office and serving as a rogue leader, literally irresponsible, breaking the laws, forming a fascist government, and back in the 1920s or so, when the book was written, so 1930s, whenever it was, and other important journalists, or I should say important journalists through the years, warned about emerging fascism in America. Going back to the 1930s, Larry, when we had Franklin Roosevelt as president, I mean, if these people were living today, imagine what they'd say.
The expression rolling, literally turning in their graves, in terms of the situation, the horrible reality of I call it de facto 21st century fascism in the U.S. I tried to warn Stephen. I did repeatedly when I was writing for the Black Commentator. I tried to warn people not only about Obama, but about perhaps just as importantly, what Obama really represented, because obviously it's not just him. He's in many respects a willing puppet. Operative word, willing. So he knew all along clearly what he was going to be doing. And people say, well, how could you say that? How? What proof do you have? Well, his third day in office, what did Obama do? Why, he started droning and bombing Pakistan. His third day in office. This is Mr. Peace and Mr. Hope and Change.
I don't remember the time frame as well as you do, Larry, but he certainly has kept up a nonstop drone attack against AFPAC, against Afghanistan and Pakistan, one of the provinces that Waristan or something like that, that borders Afghanistan, and mostly killing the vast majority of people killed non-combatants, men, women, children, and the big lies claiming otherwise, a very small percentage are so-called combatants. And high-profile combatants, only rarely do they get lucky and kill somebody high-profile. But innocent civilians are being murdered in cold blood by these operators who sit in control booths many hundreds of thousands of miles away, like playing a video game. You don't even see what the heck you're doing. You point and click, and people die.
Exactly. Exactly. You summed it up so well. It is exactly like a video game. They have tried to sanitize murder. That's essentially what they've done. I have seen some of these commercials or advertisements urging people to join the U.S. military and showing, if you will, folks who are, quote, family men, family women. Why? All they do is drive to the office and sit down and quote unquote protect our country. They sit there in front of these computer screens and launch deadly warheads, drone missiles, or drones that actually have many, many, as people should know by now, a drone is not a single weapon, it's many weapons that each drone carries. But you know, they launch these things, and they have no feeling, no compunction. overwhelmingly, they know that they are killing non-combatants. They are killing civilians. They are killing women, children, and old men. They are killing people at marriage ceremonies, for example, people trying to farm, people trying to make a living. They know that's who they're killing. And, you know, this, how long are we going to, you know, allow, this is what I mean by fascism. I mean, they know it. This is not protecting. We don't have a defense industry in this country. We have an offense industry. It is about offensive, be offensive, attack. You know, peace has become, or I should say war has become defined as peace. You know, the opposite, just like Malcolm X warned about this himself, you know, over four decades ago, he warned about this, that, you know, the big lie. But we have enough common sense in this country to know that this is a big lie. We have enough common sense. The question is, what are we always seem to come back to this point on the show, Stephen, but, you know, what are we going to do about it?
Well, that's the big thing, and anybody who thinks they can do something by voting next Tuesday is living in a dream world, because you can do nothing by going to the ballot box. It really takes it takes grassroots activism, and plenty of it, to end the Vietnam War back in the days when the anti-war sentiment was extremely strong and people were out there all the time on streets, on college campuses, in other ways. And it took 10 years to end that war. I mean, it began in the 1960s. The war didn't end officially until April 1975. It took all those years, and we had a better crop of people in the Congress then by far than we have today. Certainly not the kind of people I would want or you would want, Larry, but a much better breed of people back in those days, with a few even modestly distinguished. And it took all that time, it took all that activism over all those years to finally end that horrible war that killed millions of Southeast Asians, and maybe 50,000 U.S. military died. But the toll on U.S. military forces was much, much, much greater than that. I wrote an article yesterday on America supposedly winding down in Afghanistan with the puppet government that's in place now, leaving something like 10,000 troops in perpetuity, you know, indefinite occupation. I call it permanent occupation, which is what it is. And the toll on Americans who go to combat in harm's way, and Afghanistan is a great example, is that half of them, this is a report that I quoted from, half of them come back maimed in some way, either physically and or emotionally. A PTSD is extremely high, the incidence of it, and the physical injuries, whether it's arms and legs blown off, other serious injuries, soldiers coming back maimed for life, and the figures are astonishing. We're as many as half of U.S. combat troops come back with these kind of conditions to deal with for the rest of their lives. And these are young kids, as we know, Larry, who get sent over there, some of them still teenagers, and their lives have been ruined, some of them before they reach the age of 20. My God, you know, when you get to be a geezer like me and you get sick and you're 80 years old, you can say, well, gee, you know, I mean, I've been pretty lucky over the years. I haven't had all these problems. What if I had my arms or my legs blown off when I was 18 and 19? What in the heck would I have to look forward to? And that's what America does to its youth, and they sell people a bill of goods to go over and get rid of so-called bad guys that are invented. They're not bad guys. You know, they happen to live in a country that America wants to exploit and dominate and steal its resources and put a puppet government in place. And that's what it's all about. And these young kids don't know what the heck is going on, and they fall for this scam and the benefits that they're told they will get, which most never do, like free education and so on. And again, they end up with their lives ruined. And that's part of the great legacy of America, this horrible legacy, this police state at home and this war machine, this killing machine abroad. Just horrible, yep. Larry, horrible. Yep.
Meanwhile, the police in this nation have become virtually, totally, and even in small towns militarized. Militarized. This did not happen by osmosis. This was by design. This is 21st century fascism USA.
Oh, it really is. And the militarization of police, giving them weapons and not even training them how to use this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, they used to small arms, maybe rifles and stuff like that, maybe automatic rifles, whatever they use. I don't know exactly what the heck they use, but they don't use these high powered things that the Pentagon is giving them, surplus weapons that the Pentagon doesn't need as they develop more advanced ones, and they hand them to local police forces and they use with abandon. And really,
yes.
I mean, outrageously.
Yes. This is why I keep trying to bring, I jump back and forth from Ukraine to Afghanistan or Pakistan or Syria or Iraq. But the fact is that, as Malcolm said, the chickens are coming home to roost. And the American people had better damn well understand that the chickens are coming home to roost. Home, here, USA. And, you know, our judicial system is a joke. No justice. It's a system of injustice bought and paid for by the corporations. Our Congress is a joke. No integrity, bought and paid for by the corporations. The White House, anybody should be able to see by now that that's a joke, a very sick joke, bought and paid for by corporations, by our own U.S. oligarch, if you will. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's about grassroots organizing. It's about, this has to be done from the bottom up, not the top down, the bottom up. That's how we can succeed to save our nation and hopefully in the process to save Mother Earth, who is so precious.
Yeah, it really is, and we're losing it. We're losing it so badly. Things are so much different than when I grew up, which weren't particularly good, and especially for black people. Oh, but black people aren't doing particularly well today anyway, Larry. Maybe not as extreme as things were back then, but I remember the segregation that we had, and you remember it very well. And those are some of the ugly things that went on during my youth, the 1940s, the 1950s, and things began changing a little bit in the 1960s, but the things are still pretty bad. The term Jim Crow may be gone, but it's really reinvented in new form, and you can give it any name you want.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, and I am speaking, you know, as a veteran of the original Black Panther Party, obviously as a black person, I've got to say that it is a responsibility of all people, and that includes black people, okay, we have to take responsibility. Sitting back and whining about the situation while at the same time doing nothing to change it will accomplish nothing. I always refer to the saying about insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, exact same thing, expecting something to change. Why, that's insane. That's insane. So, yes, in many respects, the situation for black and poor people of all colors is far worse today. Far worse today than ever it was in the 60s or even the 50s. But the propaganda is also very, very strong, and this is what we have to really combat, this propaganda. Unplug from this propaganda, CBS, ABC, PBS, Fox News, CNN. What a joke. That's why I call it vomit.
Yeah, it really is vomit. That's a very good way to describe it, Larry, and pretty sickening. When I'm with other people who may not understand what's going on, and I talk about television that most people watch too much of, I refer to what passes for news on television as propaganda TV, and I keep using that phrase over and over again, which is what it is.
Yes, yes. What we have on TV and radio, for that matter, is we have two things. We have blatant propaganda and gossip, and that passes for news. Blatant propaganda and gossip. You know, divert the people's attention to this or to that with gossip. Lie to the people constantly with propaganda. That's what we have. We have no serious news media. Therefore, we have a population in this nation that is seriously uninformed and or misinformed. And, you know, how can we have a democracy with people uninformed and misinformed? Obviously, we cannot.
Indeed so, and much too indifferent about things going on. The majority of people in this country know that their lives aren't the way they want them to be. They don't have jobs they particularly like. They don't earn enough. They need at least two jobs. Husbands and wives, maybe between the two of them, they would have three or four jobs because they can't earn a living wage to pay the basic bills, which are extremely expensive for basic stuff. I mean, rent and food and medical expenses and so on. My God, just to have medical insurance is extraordinarily expensive. And rent, my God, what used to be cheap so many years ago is extraordinarily expensive. And the only way people can get by minimally is to have multiple jobs because they don't pay good enough. The benefits are far, far inferior to the way they were years ago, and in many jobs they get virtually no benefits at all. They can put up their own money and get something, maybe get a small contribution from their companies, but it's a horrible situation for people. The richest country in the world can't do the minimum needed to take care of its own people. Why? Because the benefits all go to the big corporations with the bankers at the top of the pecking order and the war profiteers right there with them, and the bankers indeed are war profiteers. They profit from everything. But and this is the way America spends its money. In the article I wrote about Afghanistan, Larry, that I got out yesterday, from the report that I quoted from, it estimated that the cost of the Afghan war, with all of the fallout from it, including the benefits and the medical care that has to be provided to the hundreds of thousands of U.S. servicemen who have been physically or emotionally impaired, the cost of that war might end up being $6 trillion. For what? Down a black hole to make the world safe for war profiteers, as I like to put it.
That you got it, because that's who it's making the world safe for. As long as we have a war, I should say a world, it's making the world safe for, I love it, war profiteers. That's exactly right. From the banksters, you know, corporate CEOs, the pharmaceutical giants, that's it. This has nothing. These bloodsuckers have nothing whatever to do. In fact, I sometimes wonder if they even know the definition of what it means to be human. They smile. They wear their fancy, you know, their suits or their fancy dresses, their fancy suits, whatever. And meanwhile, they are vampires. They are vampiric. They are sucking the lifeblood out of everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, struggling people in this nation. I'm saying it again, as Brother Malcolm said back in the mid-60s before they assassinated him. He said, the chickens are coming home to roost. Wake up. It's time for us. Wake up, America. Time for grassroots organizing. Kick the Democrats and Republicans aside. They don't represent us. They do not represent everyday, ordinary, struggling people. They are bloodsuckers. They are millionaires who are owned by billionaires.
Well, it's very true, Larry. We had some very nasty people around that got us into two world wars, and I think the people around today are the nastiest of all. Is it unreasonable to think that we couldn't have another world war? We had two of them. Two of them,
right?
Very, very possibly we could have a third one. And as I like to put it, the weapons in the first two were toys compared to the stuff around today. If there's a third world war, what will happen will be what the founder of America's nuclear navy predicted. When countries go to war with each other, they will use whatever weapons they have to win. If they can't do it with conventional weapons, they'll use other weapons if they have them, nuclear, chemical, biological, anything they have to win, because that's the only thing that matters. Into a confrontation between America and Russia. Both countries have nuclear weapons. Can you imagine a nuclear war, Larry? I mean, there's no coming back from that.
No, there isn't, and quite frankly, it is an unimaginable scenario, but it's a very real possibility. And as I keep saying, we're already in a low-intensity war. We're already there, and we've got these maniacs, these egomaniacs, these greedy bloodsuckers, vampiric bloodsuckers in Washington in particular, but not just Washington, in European capitals as well, including the NATO aggressors, U.S. allies, NATO aggressors. We've got these maniacs pushing the world closer and closer and closer to the brink of destruction. Meanwhile, even in here in our, supposedly in our country, in our own country, the people are literally being blood-sucked. Literally, the bones are being picked. Jobs, decent jobs. I'm not talking about making sandwiches. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but no benefits. Okay? No ability to live with dignity. You just described what happens to, you gave an example of the U.S. military personnel, men and women coming back from, in this case, Afghanistan. And the whole is, of course, it's not just Afghanistan. It would include Iraq. It would include other areas that the U.S. always finds its way to be in. We don't even ask ourselves, what are we doing in 50, 60, 70 countries of the world? What are we doing? How are we protecting anyone? We're hurting ourselves, and we're hurting the people in those countries. We are devastating them, and we are devastating Mother Earth. This has got to stop. And the only people who are going to stop it are grassroots, everyday, ordinary people. These maniacs who are running things have to be rushed aside. Rushed aside. It's time for the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, struggling people. Time for us on the grassroots level, as you put it, Stephen. It's time. Our time has come. If there's to be a time, then our time has come.
Yeah, it has come, Larry. It really better come, because it's the only way that we can ever get any responsible change. And the alternative looks so grim to me that I just shudder at the thought of what could happen. And, you know, it could take years for it to happen, or it could just come right out of the blue and bite you, because you could never predict when something major is going to happen. On September 10th, 2001, who could have predicted what would happen on September 11th, even though it was state-sponsored terrorism? The fact that it did happen, and a lot of people died, and it was minor. I mean, the people who died, it was a minor incident, a blip, compared to what followed in the aftermath of that terrible day, with literally America responsible for the mass murder of millions of people in all the countries it attacked, and getting people to believe that it was doing it to protect democracy and spreading all the good things America talks about. And it was exactly the opposite. It was to launch over a decade of war, literally a war that won't end. And I quoted Dick Cheney around that time, a little bit after 9/11, saying, we will be in a war that won't end in our lifetimes. Well, he was exactly right. I mean, here it is, 13 years later, and the war hasn't ended, and we could look back 13 years from now, and the war still probably won't have ended. U.S. forces withdrawing from Afghanistan, 10,000 remaining, that war could go on for 10 more years, for 20 more years. How many more millions of Afghans will die? How many more Americans will suffer if 10,000 are there? Will half of them come back maimed for life? Does anybody talk about these things? What about the suicide rate in the military and the vets who come back home again?
Right. And what does that do to this society internally? What does it do to the internal fabric of this society? And speaking of 9/11, I would like to remind our dear listeners of another 9/11, of the 9/11, September 11, 1973 in Chile. That was when the fascists, the U.S.-backed fascists, murdered thousands of Chileans, okay, and overthrew the democratically elected president. But the big U.S. corporations and the U.S. government overthrew on September 11th, okay, the democratically elected president, and installed Pinochet and his minions, and the bloodbath was endless. People are still suffering.
17 years he lasted, Larry. 17 years. Astonishing. And he got off scot-free, even after being held in house arrest in England. He got off scot-free.
Right.
I'll just coin a phrase and say he died in bed. I don't know whether he was his own bed, a hospital bed, or whatever, but he never spent a day behind bars, this mass murderer, supported by Washington, the Nixon administration, and the ones that followed Nixon. A pretty horrible situation, including Jimmy
yes.
Carter.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. So when we think of, for example, 9/11, my mind always thinks of which 9/11 are we talking about? The one in 73 that the U.S., in fact, the U.S. was behind both 9/11s. As you correctly pointed out, the 9/11, September 11, 2001, was in reality state-sponsored terrorism. Whether people want to believe it or not, all they have to do is use their common sense, look at the documentation, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. Okay, why won't Obama release the 28 pages, for example, of information that deals specifically with those people and countries that were directly involved in, quote-unquote, 9/11, 2001? Why? Why, Mr. Transparency, Mr. Hope and Change? I call him Mr. Drone Man Fascist. That's what he is.
We go through the illusion that the crazed Arabs were responsible for 9/11 and they had absolutely nothing to do with it. And I might point out also, Larry, probably I've mentioned this on the program before, and I imagine a lot of listeners know it, but when Pinochet rose to power, it was on another September 11th in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
September 11th, the first September 11th.
That's right. That's why that brought that to my mind when you said September 11th, my brother.
I'd have to double-check this, but I believe ground was broken for the Pentagon during World War II, I think, on September 11th. But I'm not certain of that. I'd have to go back and double-check.
I didn't know that, but I definitely know.
I've got to check that. But I think that may be correct, but I will double-check it. It would be very appropriate, Larry, for that to have been the date.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I say again, it's time for us to take our country back. While there is still time, we must organize on the grassroots level and dispense with these bloody warmongers. You know, I just heard that yesterday, I believe it was, at the United Nations, 188 nations at the UN voted to call for the UN, for the United States to stop the embargo against Cuba.
Hmm.
Guess who voted against it? Why, the U.S. and Israel. The U.S. and Israel. Isn't that amazing?
Amazing. And a few Pacific Islands that Washington controls.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think they have this vote all the time, and including for Palestinian self-determination. And America always, well, the General Assembly cannot institute a rule. The Security Council has to do something like this. But when something
right.
like this comes up in the Security Council, it gets vetoed by Washington all the time. And Israel is well, Israel doesn't hold a seat. But if there's a vote where Israel is involved in, then Israel will vote against the tide as well. Yeah, this
right.
goes on over and over and over again.
Yes, yes. And then people say, oh, the UN is dysfunctional. The UN is not the UN. It's the U.S. I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between the General Assembly and the Security Council. Those are both UN bodies, but they're entirely different bodies.
That's
and on the Security Council, that's where the U.S. and its flunkies block constantly what the vast majority of the world wants.
That's where the power is in the Security Council. And one country, literally one country, can block the will of the other 192. I remember we're just about out of time, Larry. I remember a mm-hmm. line I used in an article I wrote way back when I was just beginning to write, something like explaining the power of the Security Council, like saying we had a World Series, but only one team showed up.
That's an excellent example. Excellent example. Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's a good example.
Larry, we are out of time. The music is going to start momentarily, and it was another great program. The hour went by so fast. I look forward to getting you back again. I'll shoot you an email. We'll get you scheduled again in November, and we'll continue this important discussion. You have so much of importance to pass on to listeners, and I hope a lot of what they get on this program and others on PRN, they'll pass on to other people, because we're all in this together. Most of us, the vast majority, we're just ordinary folks who just want to live and let live and have a decent life, and the only way we're going to get it is if we go out and work for it, and I do believe nonviolently. It's there for the getting if we'll put in the muscle work to go get it, and if we don't get it for ourselves, we'll get it for our kids, for our grandkids, and that's the way great struggles are won.
That's right. Each one reach one, each one teach one, my brother. Each one reach one, each one teach one, as I always say in Intrepid Report that I write for. So, yes, you're absolutely correct. I love you, Steve. Stephen, you take good care of yourself, my brother. And as we said back in the day, all power to the people. Keep on keeping on.
Absolutely, Larry. Thank you so much. Another wonderful program. Join us always for more of this, and always make it a regular habit.